We're continuing the Sefer Amidot, we're up to page Reish Ein Ches, and the Magid Midovna had said that when a person does not have bitachon, when a person doesn't have faith in the true cause, in the omnipotent, so then there are three areas where he loses. And we're up to the third, Hashlishit, the third area, Ki abilti botech b'Hashem. You guys have it, page Reish Ein Ches. If someone removes his confidence from Hashem, but rather places it in a cause or in a human being, so then Hashem also removes some hashgacha from upon him, and then he is left to the causes, to whatever happens in nature. So there is this element that the more a person puts his faith in Hashem, the more Hashem keeps an eye on him. That's a concept which we touched on earlier in the whole concept of bitachon. Our sages tell us the story in the Talmud in Brachos. Yehuda bar Natan avashakil vazil batrid Rav Amnuna. He was following Rav Amnuna, Chazyei de Kamitnach, and he saw that he sighed. Amar le Yisroin Kabay Agava Latuya Nafshe. Do you want to bring upon yourself painful things? Dichtiv, the verse says in Jeremiah, Al techat mipneihem penachitecha lifneihem. Don't be scared of them, lest I destroy you before them. Meaning, it's up to you. If you're scared of them, then they can harm you. If you're not scared of them, then not. Ubechol makom shnemar al tira ve'al techat u'leilat zeh. And any time the Torah says, don't be scared, so then that's this idea. Ki ha'ma'amin basibah ma shetiyeh, u'mitere mimena. Because if one has true faith in the cause, and he's fearful of the real cause, גם אם הוא מתיירא ממלחמה, הפחד הוא, הוא סיבה חזקה להביא לו את אשר הוא ירא ממנו. כמו שנאמר, כי פחד פחדתי ואתן, ואשר יגורתי יבוא לי. Very often, the more we're scared of something, the more we bring it unto ourselves. If you're scared something's going to happen, very often you cause it to happen. I don't know if you guys ever had this experience. You're scared you're going to forget the speech. You forget the speech. You're scared you're going to say something you're not supposed to say. You end up saying exactly that. We all have that in life. The thing we're most scared of, the fear actually brings it on. A person is scared that he's going to get up there and get stage fright and he's not going to be able to talk. That's exactly what happens. Now the fear of having stage fright brings on the stage fright. I used to be a Malkore. So I'd have this in laning also. I could know Parsha by heart. And then I was scared. I'd freeze, and then I'd freeze. Now, ask me 5 minutes beforehand, I knew the whole thing by heart. Now I have the Torah in front of me, and suddenly, blank, fear. So he says, that's the idea over here. If my fear is focused on the events, so then the events have a greater potential to impact me. If my focus is, I'm going to do my end of the deal. I have to do my hishtadlut. I have to invest the proper amount, but I know that at the end of the day I'm not in control. So then the events will have less of a capacity to impact me. Now this works on two levels. He's talking on the Hashgacha Emunah level, but there's also a practical level it works on. In the Chicken Soup series, they have a book, Chicken Soup for maybe the Unsinkable Soul, or Chicken Soup about How to Succeed. So in one of those, they write in their introduction how when you try, there's a series, Chicken Soup for the Soul.
For the soul, yeah, okay.
So in one of their introductions, they write how when you're open to greater achievement, suddenly you find yourself making the connections in that direction. When you envisage yourself getting somewhere, when you actually can connect an idea, then you'll find yourselves actually making headway in that direction. A lot of where we go in life is connected to where we think we're going in life. We do, in many ways, we do frame ourselves and create our own destiny. If a person is very scared that he's going to get fired, well, there's a good chance he's going to get fired. If a person is concerned He knows he has to do a good job so he doesn't get fired. Well, then there's a better chance that he won't get fired because he's doing things in moderation. So that's what he's saying here. If you have faith in Hashem, if you have confidence in Hashem, so then you realize there are issues to contend with in this world, but there's a cause behind them. I don't have to focus my fear on them. I know there's a force behind everything that runs the show. So then I can have the confidence to contend with the challenges of life. When I'm focused on the causes, when I'm focused on the effects, I'm sorry, when I'm focused on the things that affect me most directly, so then I'm in real danger of that thing, because I'm super focused on that. And the tendency is, so he's talking on a spiritual level, we can see it also on a practical level, that's how it's going to work. I play a game with my kids on Shabbos where they dance at an arm's distance from me and I have to try and tickle them. So one of the things I often do is I do this and then I tickle them with the other hand. So they're focused on my right hand and then they know they're going to get hit by the left hand. Okay, but it's true in all of life. When we're very focused, that's one of the games in boxing and in a lot of things. You get the other side to focus on one thing and then he's very vulnerable. So he says, if you're focused on the Ribbono Shel Olam, if you know that's where you have your bitachon, so then you can have the proper focus, the proper concern, and contend with the challenges of life, and not fall prey to the challenges of life. Yeah?
Well, two things. I mean, one is bad things happen to good people. Secondly is part of being in this world is test. So if you're like trusting Hashem as part of like, oh, well, hopefully I'll be safe from this trouble and that trouble, well, that's part of like the whole point of being here in this world. It's trouble, it's as bad as it is. And my whole point is like, a lot of events in Jewish history in general has proven that like, even like the great tzaddikim, the highest emunah in Hashem, mamash, terrible things happen to them. Terrible, terrible things.
Right? He's not saying if you do this, everything will work out right. He's just saying it'll be with a greater hashgacha. Yeah, a person lives a life. Yosef HaTzadik is being sold into slavery and prostitution. So he's being sold naked to Egypt to be used and abused in the most vile way. And God arranges it that as he's being sold to Egypt, the caravan that takes him down is a caravan selling perfume, spices, so I'll have a good smell. So you ask yourself, gee, thanks, right? why does that make a difference? Right? The answer is that sometimes in a person's life, even when hard things happen, if he knows, if he gets the feeling that it's not haphazard, it's with a tremendous hashgacha, that in and of itself gives him strength to contend with the challenges he's contending with. This is a concept in marriage, it's a concept in emunah as well. Job, at the end of the book, so he suffered tremendously. He lost his wife, he lost his kids, he lost his home, he lost his fame, he lost his position, he lost everything. Everyone's spitting at him and cursing him. And at the end of the book, so God appears and tells him, okay, let me explain to you what's going on here. God gives him a whole long speech. At the end of the speech, God says, okay, now you understand? So Job says, well, I can't say no, but the answer is no. But Job says, I'm scared of saying, I still have a lot of questions, but I obviously can't let myself do that now because you've revealed yourself. And in all honesty, he says, now that I know you're watching over me, so I can live with my questions. Meaning sometimes half the hardship is the feeling that no one cares. Half the hardship is that feeling that I'm all alone here. If I know that there's a godly plan and he knows what he's doing, so that resolves a lot of the difficulty. Now, he's saying a different point. He's saying there will be greater hashgacha. So Yosef is being sold into slavery and Hashem sends him a reminder, I'm watching over you. You don't have answers as to why this is happening to you? That's true. Like you said, that's part of living in this life. Avraham Avinu didn't know why Sarah was abducted. He didn't know why he was commanded to bind his son. We don't have answers. It's part of life. But the feeling that there is Hashgacha, that's a tremendous gift. And that, he's saying, the more a person puts his bitachon in Hashem, the more he will merit to have Hashgacha. But you're right. That's not to say that therefore things will work out, right? Yosef could have Hashgacha as is being sold into slavery. So both are happening. But the fact that there's Hashgacha is still a shot in the arm. Yeah.
Let me just make sure I'm phrasing this right. If one can have Hashgacha and understand that God is behind it, even though unfavorable things to be nice, put it that way, are occurring, you could be aware, all right, it's all at the hands of God. Maybe there's light at the end of the tunnel, maybe there isn't, but I have the bitachon that God is behind this and is watching over it for better or for worse. Does that mean that one should not try to manipulate the situation to make it better for himself? Or that he should just roll with it and accept what comes his way?
Not at all. We have to do our ishtadlut. All of life is about you attempt to make it better, you're doing your best. Ishtadlut means my attempt. The question is, how much should I attempt? If I think I'm the master of my destiny and I control everything, then I'm going to do everything under the sun and then some. But if I think there's a God who controls the world, then I have a responsibility to put in my effort. At the end of the day, I don't have control what the solution's going to be, but I do have to put in my effort. So then I could live a normal life. I don't have to be one of those people that puts Kleenexes to wipe off the handle of every door before I touch it. I don't have to go on a public transportation with a mask on my face because who knows who around me has swine flu or what else. I don't have to worry about everything under the sun. But at the same time, I will do the proper normal attempts at making life good and realize that there are things that are beyond my control. There are people who get tested for all kinds of diseases 10 times a year, because who knows? Maybe this cough is much more serious. You wouldn't want to die from a cough. You knew you had a cough. Should have, you know. So there are people like that, but that we say that's not normal. A person is supposed to lead a normal life, and with the recognition I have to do mine. And at the end of the day, I don't control what's in the cards. And like Uri rightfully pointed out, I don't even understand what's in the cards. I don't have an answer. Yeah.
I don't understand this part of God having more or less Hashgacha. Like, is it that you just? Because I thought that He was the reason that everything in the world happens. So how can we say it was less or more? Is it just that you recognize more like this Hashgacha?
Okay, so let's analyze this. When you drop the pencil to the ground, is it Hashem's Hashgacha that makes the pencil fall?
It's that Hashem made such a thing as gravity.
Right, so...
It's in a very removed way.
What?
It's in a very removed way.
Okay, you could view it that way. I'm so saying Maimonides learns that it happens to be a machlokas among the rabbis of the Talmud. There's one opinion in Talmud that says every blade of grass that's growing has an angel that tells it grow. And Maimonides learns that that's an opinion that says that for everything within nature, there's a certain element of Hashgacha. So that's one opinion, which Maimonides says we don't go with, and most people don't seem to live life that way. There were people who did. There are stories of rabbis who were standing next to their students, and the student plucked a leaf off a branch, and the rabbi was devastated. How could you do such a thing? Okay, but we don't usually view life that way. You don't think of all the angels you're stepping on as you step on grass, or pull out some grass, or mow your lawn. That's not what you're thinking of, right?
But events in my life, like events in the world.
Okay, so then you could go to the discussion of Maimonides, Nachmanides that we learned a few weeks ago on Friday about what does prayer do? Maimonides says there's the course of events. There's the natural course of events. So Nachmanides asks on Maimonides, then what are you doing praying for? Do we say that the question whether a person will be healed from an illness is God's Hashgacha? Or do we say, no, it depends on how many antibodies, how much medication, his genetic, what he's prone to genetically. It depends on a lot of things, but God's not a part of the calculation. So Nachmanides says, and this is usually the accepted opinion, that there's a realm of things which are not defined. It's not defined how it's going to play itself out. You aren't focused, and you run a red light. Are you going to live or die? Well, there's a truck coming from the other direction. Is he going to see you in time to halt or not? So there are a myriad of things that happen that it's within the range where it could play itself out one of different ways. And that's where we say, if a person is more meritorious, they will have greater hashgacha. Hashem will so to speak, take the extra step to ensure that it plays itself out the right way. And if not, so then there could be a greater approach of, I'm not getting involved, or in the words of the Talmud, a person should always be careful not to put himself in a situation of danger, because if you put yourself in a situation of danger, two things happen. One is you get judged up above. Does he deserve that we should interfere on his behalf? And even if they do interfere on your behalf, so in heaven they remove some merits, they say.
But it sounds like that there's, as a default, there's the natural process that the world runs in. And then once in a while, when Hashem decides, he throws a monkey wrench and interferes with the natural order.
Well, so the Ramban claims it's much more than once in a while, and it's not what we would call a monkey wrench as much as there's a realm of things that are, that's what we daven for. Look, I'll give you an example from tomorrow, okay? The United States is going to have elections. Now, the storm, Sandy, could play in Romney's favor. Everyone's saying it's going to be in Obama's favor. But New Yorkers can't go out and vote. So they're trying to set up all kinds of things to get New Yorkers to vote. But if you look at the division of who has power, who doesn't have power, who's more likely to go out and vote, there's a very strong possibility that Romney will win New York. I don't know if a Republican won New York in the last century. Same thing with New Jersey. So now it can play itself out either way. It's a question of which station is going to get its gas, which person is going to have the koch to go, which person is...
But is Hashem constantly creating the world, or is the world already created and it's running its course, and then whenever
is fit,
he changes things like that.
So the Ramban says, first of all, we say in davening every day, Am chadesh betuvo b'chol yom tamid ma'asev reshit, that there's a rejuvenation, that Hashem gives life constantly. No, it's in Birchas Kriyashma. It's in Birchas Kriyashma. I think so.
You've said it more than I
said. Doesn't mean I remember correctly, but I think it's there. And the ideas and prophets too. The question is, what element of involvement does he have? So Nachmanides relegates it to the areas that are undefined. There's no way of forecasting scientifically. Let's say a couple conceives 25% of the time, meaning when a couple wants to conceive, statistically it will take them 4 months to conceive. Every month, it's not really accurate what I'm saying statistically, but every month has a 25% chance that they'll conceive. Once a couple gets married, that's their statistic. So now, realistically, with combinations and permutations, it's not true to say that in 4 months they'll conceive. Every month has a 25% chance. Meaning it's like you flipped two heads. Does that mean the next time you're going to flip the tails? Every flip has a 50-50 chance, right? But the question is now... Sorry, I just don't have a voice. The question is, when you enter realms which are undefined within science, you know, you're going to shoot a bullet at someone, so then you need a miracle for the guy to disappear and the bullet not to hit him, right? That's a miracle. But if a guy is going to cross the street without looking, is that a miracle that he doesn't get killed? Usually not. Some people will and some people won't. And which one will he be? Now Hanukkah's coming up. So Hanukkah, 14 years ago, I was crossing Coney Island Avenue. It was a rainy night, and a car was making a left turn. Someone flashed their brights at him to tell him he can make the turn, and he was blinded. He was an old man. I was wearing a black winter coat, and it was a rainy night. He didn't notice me. So he's making a left turn, and I'm walking, and I turn around to see him hit me. So I slid onto his car, and he didn't notice that I'm there. He didn't notice that he hit me. And hits the pedal. And he's starting to speed up on Coney Island Avenue. And I'm holding on for, you know, I'm holding on so as not to fly off. And I see he doesn't notice I'm there. I'm on his hood. You know, so I you know what to do. So I knock. You know? So he looked, and what do you think he does? Slams the brakes. So now I go flying across the lanes of Coney Island Avenue. And I walked away unscathed, to the point where the police came, they couldn't believe it happened. Meaning, so then I had a question, is that called a miracle? Is that not called a miracle? If the police tell me they never saw something like that in their life, and I could explain it logically. It was rainy. My coat was covered with a sheet of rain. His car was covered with a sheet of rain. Instead of going under his wheels, I slid over his hood. You know, I could explain it logically. There's no reason to say it's a miracle. Why did it matter to me if it was a miracle or not? Do I make a blessing every time I walk by that place? Meaning there's a blessing. If a miracle happened to you, every time you walk there, you're supposed to say, blessed is the one who made a miracle for me over there. I'm not convinced it's a miracle. Even though, what? And my children, right?
You're not convinced it's a miracle?
No. Because within nature, some people go this way and some people go that way. I'm appreciative. Every year when that date comes, I make a little meal and I tell over the story and I say a psalm of thank you. But to say it's a miracle, I don't know. If I'd be invisible and the car would pass by and then I'd reappear, then I'd know it was a miracle. If I jump and suddenly have a bionic leap over the car, so then I could say that's a miracle. If I slid... So, you know, I appreciate it. I think I was granted a favor. I was granted life. But I don't know that something like that could be defined as a miracle. Even though the police told me, the reason I had doubt was because the police wouldn't believe that it happened. When the police came to the scene, they couldn't believe two things happened, really. One, I slid over his car, not under. And I held on, meaning... And there were no cars coming. I crossed like four lanes when he hit the brakes. You know, I ran across four lanes. And I ran, meaning I didn't hit the floor. I ran in reverse. Like, you know, it's okay. He wasn't driving too quickly. He had just made the turn. He was just starting to hit the pedal, saying it's all a matter of 2 seconds. So, again, I don't think it's a miracle. I think it's a question where I'm thankful that Hashem kept me alive. But I think there are areas like that where it could have gone either way. I think so, because you have to say it was a danger, yeah.
That's important. I mean, it was. I think you should have explained that.
What's the question?
But by saying it's not a miracle, you're not saying it's just some random chance, I don't think.
No, I'm saying thank you to the Creator for keeping me alive.
Yeah.
I definitely see that it could have played itself out one of two ways, but this is where the Ramban says... There are things like an illness. You know, I have a very good friend who passed away from the flu. He had the flu, and he didn't recover from the flu. Every year, there are a lot of people who die from the flu. We assume we get the flu, we'll get better, everything's okay. But there are a lot of people who die from the flu every year. That's why it was funny what they did over the swine flu, because more people die from the regular flu than from the swine flu. But they made a big deal of the swine flu. So I spoke to doctors. They said nothing to get so excited about. That the regular flu is a much bigger killer every year. So at any rate,
because it's from swine.
I'm just saying so a guy gets sick, is he going to get better or not? Or, for different illnesses, there are different statistics. That's where the Ramban says, that's where we daven. Now, if a person's on a higher level and he merits more Ashgacha, so then there's an element where either Hashem will take the steps that it doesn't happen or get him out of the situation. Each person on his level. So Avraham Avinu could be on a level where he attacks four powerful kings and he's victorious. He was ready to die. He didn't know he'd win. So he had extra Ashgacha that he won. That's already when you enter the realm where it really looks like a miracle.
Wow. That's so sunny. I can't even... It sounds like a very brisker approach. You look at every detail.
Well, you have to be logical.
No, any person... I mean, I would know that. Say a miracle. That's a miracle.
You have to have definitions that you both agree on.
No, so the definition of a miracle is something that's unnatural. I don't think you could call this unnatural. I think it's within the realm of nature. I agree with you that the statistics were against me. If the police wouldn't believe it, if the police told me they never saw something like that, so then I agree with you that it's not, the statistics weren't in my favor. But with all due respect to the police, I know what happened to me, and I don't think you could call that a miracle. I slid onto the car instead of off of the car. And he was going slow enough that I was able to hold on. I'm saying, maybe I'm wrong, but then, yeah.
I just can't even imagine it. I would go crazy.
Okay. Yeah.
It's about the sliding under going over the car. So the vast majority of pedestrians go onto the car. The death is not caused by rolling, being rolled over by the car. The death is caused that your head smacks onto the bonnet of the car. And I'd say the miracle is more that your legs didn't get broken while flopping onto the car. But the flopping onto the car part, that's regular. The problem is that then you smash your head on the car, that's what kills you.
Yeah, but he wasn't going that fast. He was just making the turn. He was coming from standing at a red light, turned green, moved forward, made a left turn, hit me. Saying that's not, you're not talking about a car at 50 miles an hour. You're talking at 10, 15 miles an hour. That's not, I don't think that's a miracle. I have appreciation. I'm not going to take away from the appreciation I have.
We want to try it again.
Right. Yeah.
So first of all, before I even say anything, we can't say that like Hashem is anything because everything we know is inside of creation and He created creation, so He's outside of that. So we can't say He's anything that we know. But think of Hashem's intervention in everything as like a computer program, right? And like everything has like sort of like code, right? So, you know, Hashem's constantly running the program, right? And that I asked somebody, like, how would you define a miracle? And they're like, well, it's an act of Hashem. So I said, well, then technically everything is a miracle because everything that's happening Hashem is arranging. So I think that what we're discussing is its own category of miracles. Like, a miracle is that we're talking about is when Hashem, like, puts, like, throws, like, an anomaly inside of the code and something abnormal happens. I think what we're discussing is, like, a miracle that needs its own category that I don't think it has its own category, which is Hashem uses the laws of nature to facilitate an unlikely event. One that can be, you know, brought about through natural causes, but still statistically unlikely. I think it's its own category of miracle that it deserves to be called a miracle and needs to be put in its own category.
So Nachmanides discusses this. In our Friday class, we studied it. Nachmanides makes two discernments. You're making a third. And this is Maimonides as well. Nachmanides says, the laws of nature are really a miracle that we're accustomed to. The Kuzari also says that. There's no... you're accustomed to breathing, but you don't really have any... You can speak about the external causes, but when you look behind the causes, what's that thing that we call life? So we're always looking at step 2 and 3 and 4, maybe 20 and 30 and 40, but behind it all, where does everything begin? So the Ramban says the idea you're saying, that even the things we're accustomed to, they're only systems that we have learned to anticipate. That doesn't make them less of a miracle. That's Nachmanides' approach. He says, then you have things that go against the system. If the sun were to rise in the west, that's a miracle. That's against the system you're used to. If a person can levitate, that's a miracle. It's against the system you're used to. You're used to gravity. He seems to be defying gravity. So that's what Nachmanides is saying. You're saying a third thing. You want to say something that's statistically unlikely is also a miracle. Well, I guess we could say that too, because the ground's opening up directly under Korach. So that's along the lines of what Maimonides says, where Maimonides says that every miracle is caused by nature. And the miraculous aspect is the timing. It's not the event. Everyone was up in arms against Maimonides, and we, I think, already discussed that there are bug wrote an even more controversial work than Maimonides' work called Milchamot Hashem, in which the Ralbag takes this to an extreme, where he takes every miracle in the Tanakh and starts discussing how you can explain it naturally, and even rabbis went out all out against the Ralbag. It's a phenomenon, to my mind, that the Ralbag is actually printed in the Mikros Gedolos, that they agreed to incorporate him, because they were so against that approach. According to him, maybe, I don't know. So there is the approach along the lines you're saying, but I think the more accepted approach is Nachmanides' approach, which says there's what we call nature, and the Kuzari also goes with this approach, which are the phenomenon which we're accustomed to, that we see as a system, that we learn to live with that system and count on that system, and even set up rules of how that system works, and those rules are accurate. Now, we know the speed at which gravity pulls, right? We know the acceleration, we know the force. We know that. So it's a system which, even though we might not understand where does gravity come from, but we learn to define the rules of the system. So that's the Ramban. He discerns between those things and the things which are completely external to our system. We have no natural explanation. We don't understand the system because we don't really understand the other system either. Meaning we talk about the forces, the quantum physics. We don't understand really why every mass has a pull. Why is it that we can discuss how strong is the force that holds the electron in orbit? But we don't understand the force. We can discuss the neurons and we can discuss the electrotransmitters, but we don't understand the force that really is at play within our nervous system, our exoskeletal system. We don't understand it. Our skeletal system. We know how to work. We know how to define the system and work externally. But when you're talking about getting internally, what we might call, and excuse the pun, the neshama, the soul of the matter, so then really we don't have a definition. We don't know what life is or what any force really is. We know how to work with the system that works with the force, but not to define where it comes from. Yeah? So that's what Nachmanides says. All those things that work within the system, they're one kind of miracle, what we call nature, and the Kuzari says the same idea. And then there are things that defy the system. If it suddenly you have rain and fire mixed together, so that seems to us unnatural. One should be victorious. They don't. In our world, we don't have within our system that you could have ice and fire coming down from heaven together, and they make peace with one another. That's the hail of the plague of hail in Mitzrayim. We don't understand it. When Moshe Rabbeinu could make the hail freeze in the air, we don't understand that. That's external to our system. When King David or when Joshua made things that were against nature, that we call a miracle. So that's Nachmanides.
Right, I was taking it one step further, saying that there's like you were saying, the miracle that is nature, but also in nature there are circumstances that come together to form a third category.
I respect that. I'm just saying that's another opinion, which I agree with you, that they shouldn't be mutually exclusive. But on a philosophical level, I wouldn't agree with you, because I'd say prove it. And I take it one step further. I don't remember if it was my son, but there was a kid once who asked me. I don't remember which kid. I remember which kid. It wasn't my son. This goes back 15 years ago. There was a kid who asked me if Moshe grew up in Pharaoh's palace. And in Pharaoh's palace, there were major astronomers and sorcerers. And then Moshe disappears from Egypt somewhere. They don't know where. Why is it so far-fetched that the Egyptians thought that here he got the best schooling in sorcery and astronomy, and now he took it one step further? He was an even better sorcerer and better astronomer than they were. Great. So why should they believe in God? No. So I'd say the same thing. If you're going to tell me something that's statistically it's statistically far-fetched. So I'd say, okay, but maybe Moshe knew how to predict when it would hail. And you see, Pharaoh thought that too. That's Nachmanides' interpretation over there. When Moshe comes to Pharaoh and he says, when do you want the plague to stop? So Pharaoh says, tomorrow. So Moshe says, fine. So Nachmanides asks, why did Pharaoh say tomorrow, not this second? So Nachmanides says, because Pharaoh thought, maybe Moshe figured out astronomically when this is supposed to happen, and he's coming to me assuming I'm going to say now. So I'm willing to suffer the plague another few hours. I'm going to tell him tomorrow, because he's not expecting that. So Moshe says, fine, kidvarecha, as you wish. Tomorrow, that's when it's going to stop. So that's, you see, Nachmanides learned that Pharaoh, that's a different thing, right? Okay.